James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington. I don't know if people are out watching the sky tonight, but they're very clear where we are, and we have quite a few people out there standing in the snow, sky watching as we speak, and there's a lot of activity tonight, so if you have time after the show or whatever, get out and check out the skies, because we've seen probably, I lost track after about 8 or 9 definite UFOs doing all kinds of weird antics up there. That these are definitely not satellites and they're not meteors, but they're definitely something out of the ordinary. Tonight's guest, we have Mike Wright, who's a teacher at the Rompa School of Enlightenment, and he does wonderful presentations on physics and tying it into spirituality, and he has a book on non-locality and the observer. And a lot of these subjects I've been very fascinated with and how they're affecting us in the days to come. So without, making a long story out of this, we just want to welcome Mike on the show so we can really get into this information. So, Mike, are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Oh, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You know, we have so many questions coming in and so many different ways we can go with this, but what I'd like to do is start off with some of the, the basic understandings in physics and how the new teachings that you're bringing forward differ from some of the, the basic understandings about the universe in which we live and the other dimensions and things of that nature.
Well, I think the all of us that went through our basic high school and college education got the classical physics version of reality, and then if you continued on in university training, you would get an introduction to quantum physics, quantum mechanics, and the various models of reality at the quantum level. And that's unfortunate because sciences could be taught in parallel, classical as well as quantum physics, and into early education. We certainly have the tools and the understandings to do that now. Probably the biggest innovation from classical physics of the late 1800s into the quantum view of reality that grew through the 1900s is that the scientists were given just irrefutable evidence from in their laboratory experiments that there's not one right version of reality, that there's not just one right description of reality, but that everybody can have their own interpretation. And so we find in for example, you have the Copenhagen interpretation of the quantum mechanics, and you have the many worlds interpretation, you have John Wheeler's participatory, and on and on and on and on. So the great delight of that is it opens the door to multiple simultaneous views of reality, and sort of it diminishes the value or the usefulness of models of reality that say, well, this is the one right way and everybody else is wrong. And that in particular has been the greatest influence in the sciences of the understanding of the quantum models of reality, and slowly that's trickling through from the hard sciences to the softer social sciences as well.
Yeah, I think it was the Heisenberg principle, where every experiment is pretty much affected by the observer, the one doing the experiment. And
well, that's known as the observer effect. That the observer affects what's being observed, and and in some models, that's preeminent in terms of interpreting the results of the effort, as well as the design and the setup of the experiment. That simply in contemplating what question you're going to ask and how you're going to investigate the nature of reality influences the results you're going to get. And, of course, the value of that in our work, in consciousness work or in self-development work, is that any one person is an observer of their reality, and how you view your reality affects how you're going to experience reality.
So if we live in a world where, I guess what we call it is that consciousness creates reality, the plane of demonstration, where we demonstrate our consciousness or, in the physical, and all this quantum physics is correct. A lot of people ask this question, and I've always talked about it too, about how much control we have over the world in which we live, because I've seen some people go, well, it's all an illusion, so it doesn't matter, and the physical doesn't really matter because it's all an illusion. And I always say, well, what you do here in the physical either weighs heavy or hard on the soul, depending on your consciousness. So it does have a lot to do with it. And we get a lot of people that say, you know, if I don't believe in, you know, a good example is the earth changes, that people say, well, I don't believe in the earth changes, so it's not going to affect me. And I always ask them, you know, when's the last time you levitated or bilocated or you know, stopped a wave coming in from the ocean? And, you know, I see there's kind of a, maybe you can help us with that understanding about where do you go with this as far as one person saying it's all an illusion and that we can, and then the other person saying, you know, that, you know, we are physical beings and we are going to have a physical experience unless we've totally mastered that.
Well, I think there is a huge difference between having a philosophical position that, you know, it's all an illusion, so it's not important, and having, you know, the power to demonstrate to back up your philosophical position. You know, somebody comes up to me and says, well, it's all an illusion. And in fact, I've had people say that to me. And, you know, the classical Zen approach to that is you slap them on the face, and when they look startled, you say, well, I thought it was all an illusion. How come you're looking so startled? But, you know, if somebody says it's all an illusion, say, well, you know, show me what you mean. You know, show me, you know, break the illusion for me. Let me see what you're talking about, because it looks pretty real to me. And I think that's a matter of perspective. You can say it's an illusion because it's all pliable, it's all malleable. You can, you know, change your perspective on your view of reality in a moment. So does that mean that the previous view of reality was an illusion? Or was it simply your previous view, and now you've, you know, seeing things in a new light? I think it's both. We can make reality through our own willful efforts. We can mold reality. We're creators. Every one of us are creators, even in the most, you know, mundane of interpretations of creating a, you know, a school project, or creating a business proposal for a new division and expanding one's business, or creating a piece of music or a piece of art. It's our ability to mold reality which shows us that it's, you know, it's not as fixed and permanent, although obviously many things that we experience seem to be fixed and permanent from our day-to-day experience. But because we have the ability to mold our circumstances, we're not simply subject to the circumstances of our environment, then that's, you know, that gives us, the every individual, that power to create reality, and our conscious effort at doing that brings its own rewards. The more that we apply conscious effort to our own personal reality and our own personal change, the immediacy of that feedback is, you know, we get the benefit of those efforts, and that gives us the confidence to take on greater tasks in the future. And so it's a progressive, it's evolutionary. If we continue to work in the mold and, you know, build our knowledge base and then build our experience base from our new knowledge, then we look back over the course of many years and we find that, oh my gosh, yes, I'm a much more powerful being than I used to be.
Yeah, I've pretty much been talking a lot about that same thing. As I look at my, where I was in my past concerning relationships, everything, and the world I was creating, and where I'm at now, and it's such a leap from where I used to be, and at the same time I have this thing about nature. I love nature, and I know nature's going to do her thing, and she has a consciousness or whatever you want to call it, and it seems to be moving in a direction of wanting to clean up and cleanse itself. And then we have, you know, the sciences, where they've got you know, the geologists and a lot of the historians and everything, where they have these cycles where these things happen repeatedly every so often, and you see that, and then you tie that into the consciousness of the individual, and then you add the other, what, 7 million people that have a collective consciousness going in a certain direction.
Well, there's consensus consciousness, there's consensus reality, there's cultural, you know, there's cultural agreements, social agreements,
mm-hmm.
on all levels of scale, from family to, you know, political affiliations to nationalities and so on up the scale. And certainly, as you said, you know, nature too has its own, you know, its own destinies that it's playing out. And there's certainly interesting and volatile times at the moment. And I think one thing that the value of looking at what's going on around us, even if it's not happening in our backyard, is to say, well, what if? You know, what if we have, you know, the tsunami had hit here or the hurricane had hit here? How would I have fared if that had happened in my backyard? And then you can look at, play through those various scenarios and say, well, you know, what could I do to, you know, better, you know, be better prepared to live through such an event in my area? And then you can sleep well at night, and you know that, you know, you're going to fare well regardless of what goes on. And so that gives you, again, that strength and confidence of you can create and continue to create the reality that you desire despite what's going on in the environment around you. I was over in Europe last week doing a couple of events for Ramp the School, and I was in Spain on the weekend of the 17th, and then I went over to the UK. And in the days after I had left Spain was when that major storm raced through the Pyrenees, in France and Spain, and there were, you know, huge power outages and transportation shutdowns and people in very difficult straits because of a major storm. And it had no impact on me simply because I happened to have been there, you know, a few days ahead of it and was gone by the time it came through. So, you know, did I create not being at the, you know, at that point at the time when the storm hit? In a manner of speaking, I did. Was it a conscious creation? Not really. I didn't think, well, I don't want to go to Spain in January because there might be storms. I simply created the workshop and set up the dates when it was, you know, when it worked for me, and I was in and out of there, and then the storm came through afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So you could call it coincidence, but I, you know, I like to say that there's more to it than that. So that's an example of, you know, earth changes or volatility or, you know, the days of, you know, all those predictions of, you know, it's going to be hard for some people, it's going to be fine for other people. It's not in an all or nothing, you know, blanket catastrophe or blanket, you know, transmutation to a higher state of being without having to make personal effort.
Oh, I agree 100%. I came out, I went... Hawaii trip, and we do everything on inner guidance, and we kind of go with this flow. It's a different flow than most of social consciousness, and I'm sure you're working on the same principle. And when you're in that flow, you seem to miss a lot of these events. I flew out just underneath this big storm that hit the Pacific Northwest here,
mm-hmm.
and it just started snowing. I took off that morning for Hawaii and spent 3 weeks over there, and I came back afterwards. Yeah, I think it was something like 54 degrees in Portland when I landed.
Yeah.
When I came back 3 weeks later, and it was just, the timing was just perfect. And
we
have techniques that we go in and we said, okay, what's the best time to go? And we go, you know, in, connect with our own, you know, higher aspect of ourselves or whatever you want to call it. You know, there's a higher consciousness and energy out there that can kind of help you out, and I know when you get in that flow and you have that connection going, you automatically are just guided to this place and that place, and you seem to miss a lot of these events.
Yes, and that's really that's that creative aspect of self, where if we make the effort to, you know, consciously contemplate and decide this is what I want, and you know how best to make it unfold, and how best to create it, how best to set it up. Then, you know, we're applying our observer. We're applying the observer effect to as mundane a thing as a trip, you know, to Hawaii or a trip to Europe or a trip, you know, the commute to work, rather than being unconscious and then simply being subject to the whims of the collective consciousness or the lack of any consciousness. So anytime we make, you know, the least of conscious effort, reality responds to our observations. That's the blessing of the observer effect, and there's a very practical example you just described.
Yeah, I'd like to get into the physics aspect that you teach there at the school. And I don't know if you use the same words. There's a vibrational continuum, or I know there's other scientific words for this, but where we're moving from, I guess the best way to explain it is how the different dimensions or different aspects of ourselves tie into the light spectrum and how that all comes together. Maybe you could help us gain a little wisdom into that.
I don't understand the vocabulary you just used, so come at it another way, because I'm not sure what you mean by vibrational continuum.
It's like frequencies or how we have like multi-dimensional aspects of ourselves.
So we are more than our bodies. Let's start with that.
Exactly, yeah. And how that would tie into, I know a lot of the teachings that they talk about the light spectrum, you know, how it goes from Hertz in, I believe, to visible light and infrared, and then...
Ramtha's model on the nature of reality is used in seven tiers or seven levels,
mm-hmm.
and it's seven levels of consciousness and seven levels of energy, so seven levels of consciousness and energy, because one of the limitations of a lot of philosophical models is they say, well, everything is energy. Even scientists sort of kind of casually say that, but everything isn't just energy. You don't have energy without information,
mm-hmm.
and information is knowledge, information, consciousness. There's the tie-in to consciousness and energy. And so in Ramtha's model, the nature of reality spans seven different levels that you can consider them dimensional levels. You can consider them, I'd like to compare them to seven different cultures, because each one is distinct. And he uses the electromagnetic spectrum as a way of using the nomenclature of the electromagnetic spectrum for the seven levels of consciousness and energy. And so the lowest energy portion of the electromagnetic spectrum, the radio wave portion, which Ramtha calls Hertzian after Mr. Heinrich Hertz that discovered radio waves, corresponds to physical reality in the three planes of dimension, of spatial dimension shifts and time as we experience it here. And it also corresponds to subconscious awareness, because we can exist here and never really have a conscious thought and then just respond to the environment according to our genetic programming.
Mm-hmm.
And then the levels in the electromagnetic spectrum go up from radio to microwave, visible light, ultraviolet, and so on up the spectrum to gamma and to infinite unknown beyond that. And each one of those different bands of the electromagnetic spectrum have distinctive characteristics to them, which are measurable. And in fact, you know, you can heat a cup of coffee or reheat a cup of coffee or a hot dog in a microwave oven, but you use a radio when in the radio spectrum when you're going to listen to a broadcast. So they're both electromagnetic energy, but they have different characteristics because of their particular frequency bands that they operate in. And so too with the different aspects of consciousness. Human beings, in fact, all of life is not singular in its consciousness. We have different aspects to consciousness that we can use and access, and our brain and our bodies are capable of facilitating all seven levels of consciousness and energy.
So, in other words, we would have the ability to have a multidimensional self. I mean, or have access. One thing a lot of people say, you know, it's my belief, and I would say there's a lying belief, but you know, it's my belief that we're multidimensional beings, that we exist on a frequency continuum or vibrational continuum, depends on what words you want to use, and that we have all these different levels to ourselves, you know, beyond just this body and this personality. We have higher levels of consciousness or expanded states of awareness, you might say, all the way back to the source itself, and that seems to fit within that electromagnetic model that you were just giving it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's another way of describing it.
Mm-hmm. The other question I have is right now, we talked a little bit earlier about it, but right now the scientists are saying the heliosphere is greatly diminished, and this is coming from NASA, and I guess the sun's going through a kind of a shutdown cycle where it's holding its heliosphere very tight, you know, bringing it in. So we're And also, too, the magnetic fields of the Earth, they're finding some pretty big holes, and it's kind of scattered. It's not the way it usually looks, you know, that we're used to. But as far as, you know, the donut with the rings around it, you know, that people are used to seeing, but it's much more complicated than that. But they're finding a lot of pretty big holes in our own magnetic fields right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two things. One is that, being the case, it seems to be we're going to be open to cosmic rays, gamma, all these different higher, higher frequency rays, or whatever you want to call them, you know, or higher rays on the electromagnetic spectrum. And as you were saying, that each one of these rays seem to carry consciousness with them as well. So.
Yeah.
It seems when you tie this all in together and we're being bombarded by cosmic rays and gamma rays and all these other fields coming from space, it's going to make a definite shift in consciousness and the evolution.
Yes, however, you know, we have to go back to who's operating the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And the Earth has always been bombarded by cosmic rays and gamma rays and X-rays and ultraviolet rays. The magnetosphere and the ionosphere ameliorate some of what that getting to the surface. But you can go out on a summer day in Australia and you can get plenty of, you know, ultraviolet consciousness energy, you know, and it's going to give you skin cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the operator of the body, the being, is not, isn't operating in that place in their brain where they can process that energy and process that information, and so it becomes damaging to them. So it's not simply a matter of the, you know, at least in Rampa's model and Rampa's methodology and in the school, it's not enough to just say, well, you know, the magnetosphere has got some openings and the heliosphere from the sun is getting ready to give us a big blast of, you know, higher frequency consciousness energy, because, you know, that bigger blast isn't going to do people any good if they're not in a state of knowledge and experience to be able to process it. I mean, just all you got to do is look at atomic weaponry or sunscreen to know that most people can't handle the frequency or the energy that's on those higher frequencies. So you've got to be in you've got to be in a state of conscious awareness, what you called a broader state of awareness and consciousness, in order to be able to process the information. Otherwise, it's damaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely seems like I see there's both pitfalls and. I don't want to say pitfalls, but it's almost like we're being pushed to evolve and to raise our frequencies.
Always been the case. That's evolution in action.
Yeah, to adapt. But it seems like this is being sped up. You know, we're getting ready for a quantum leap in evolution, and some people may not do too well with this shift. And I'm seeing over and over that and, you know, doing a lot of counseling work, my phones have just been ringing off the hook lately, and people are just going through the roof and processing, having to face, you know, all of their old wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions from past experiences are just coming up, you know, in their face right now. So just being observing that element and what's going on there, it's obvious that there's definitely something behind that, some kind of a shift that's behind that that's pushing all this forward. What exactly is behind that shift? There's so many different people. Some people say we're moving into an alignment with galactic plane and we're going to have this huge serpent wave come through and it's going to wake everybody up. I mean, I've heard so many different stories about this, but one thing I know just from observing what's going on around me is that a lot of people are, you know, having a quantum leap in consciousness. They're being pushed very hard to release the past and heal and move forward. And some people aren't doing very well with this energy at all. They're getting hit like a brick with it.
Okay. Well, I think everybody in every lifetime and every incarnation, you know, has those same pressures to deal with, that everybody confronts it. I mean, maybe 60, 50 years ago or 20 years ago, before the 80s, it was called a midlife crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you reach a certain point and you're just not satisfied anymore, so you start looking around for more and for answers, and the conventional solution was to, you know, have an affair or buy a new car.
Mm-hmm.
And since the 80s, and, you know, since the you know, kind of the coming out of the closet of personal spiritual development and having much broader access to it with modern technology and the internet in particular, you know, people are finding alternative ways to confront those eternal questions and those eternal issues of, is that it? Is it all there is to my life? Is it just more of the same until I, you know, wear out this body? And so I think it's the nature of every person's life and to be confronted with those. And is this a particularly special time in Earth's history? It may be, but I think it's a cycle that everybody goes through at any time they have that they have those pressures to face.
Yeah, it seems just from my own. Sometimes I can actually feel it. I feel waves of energy moving through the planet or whatever, moving through my own consciousness or mm-hmm. body. And I also see too when the sun does its thing and throws off a big coronal mass ejection,
yeah.
you'll see it affects the bioelectric fields around the human body and
people
oh, absolutely.
Start flipping
it affects- out. You know when that happens as well. So there's definitely a connection between light and consciousness and the whatever the solar energy, whatever energies you want to talk about that are coming in. They're definitely having an effect on you know all of humanity. It seems, and there seems to be something accelerating right now.
Yeah. Well, the increase in the coronal mass ejections and its pulsing effects on the Earth's magnetosphere is one of the cyclical phases that the Earth-Sun relationship goes through over the course of many tens of thousands of years, and it also helps to recharge the Earth. And in one study that I read, it actually can affect the Earth's rotation rate, kind of like pumping. A spinning top to spin it up again. So certainly it's an interesting and dynamic time, and the more dynamic it gets, the more range of options we have if we have the knowledge to be aware of them and to exercise them. And if we don't, then the volatility can be panicky for people that are used to control and predictable realities and stasis. This is definitely not a stasis time.
Yeah, I'm seeing right now we really have to master that loving detachment, and prepare. I always tell people now is the time to prepare. With
yeah,
loving
the time to prepare
detachment.
Is not when it's raining. The time to buy the raincoat is before it starts raining.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody says, oh, you're selling fear and you're pushing fear. And I go, well, I've had a lot of visions. I wrote about them since 1982, and they're all unfolding, so... When you give exact dates and times of major quakes and they hit, then after about three or four of them, you start to go, well, maybe I should start, listening.
Well, look, when somebody says that, you just ask them, do you watch the weather forecast on nightly news? Don't you want to know what the future holds so that you can be prepared for it? Is the meteorologist selling fear because they're saying there's a storm front coming in? And, there's potential for power failure? I don't think so. I think it's information. It's not good news or bad news. It's news, and you can use it or not.
Yeah, pretty much. I think people always want to attach something to it, and especially people that are very attached to the status quo or keeping everything the same.
Well, that's the blessing of reincarnation.
Yeah.
That's where that loving detachment comes from, when you're not your body, Like,
yeah.
It's my favorite body, but it's a rental, so.
Yeah. That's why I go, we're all eternal. We'll come back, We'll do it again.
Yeah.
So. I know Michal comes up here now and then, and we've had some great conversations with him, and he's spoken at the conferences. And I like what he said. He goes, a lot of people say, I don't believe in reincarnation. He says, yeah, you said that the last lifetime.
Yeah.
And it's pretty funny thinking about it. People ask me if I believe in reincarnation. I said, well, I'm pretty much aware of a lot of my lifetime, so it's not a belief anymore. It's just a reality. I can't really contemplate not having a second chance. That makes no sense whatsoever.
It's also a topic that when you're dealing with skeptics or you're dealing with people from conventional backgrounds, then you're not quite sure, how open-minded they are or how interested they are in discourse, even if it's skeptical discourse without prejudgment. it's a great way to sort of feel out somebody and say, so, you know, what's your take on reincarnation? Because however they answer it, you know that they're not answering it based on personal immediate experience unless they have had, you know, a near-death experience or out-of-body experience. And so, you know, how they approach that particular topic can give you quite an insight into somebody else's modus operandi.
Yeah, it definitely is. To me, when I was in college, I was taking a psychology class, and I pretty much got thrown out of there. They asked me not to participate anymore because, I kept asking these questions. I said, well, wait a second. You know, if there's been no childhood trauma, where are these phobias coming from? You know, when people have an extreme phobia of water or even counseling, I had a couple that they could not go near. If they went near water together, they wanted to just kill each other. And this energy came up, and they got really fearful and angry. And they bought a boat, and they wanted to go sit on this boat, but they couldn't go together and be near water.
Hmm.
And so we regressed them, took them back, and cleared up about several past lives where they actually killed each other, either by drowning each other or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that was cleared up, they were fine, and they could go right out on the boat, and they had no problems after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes no sense whatsoever when you look at where these phobias come from and where these special gifted people just pick up an instrument and can play it. You know, it didn't come from anything from this life, so it had to come from, you know, some kind of other extended consciousness that exists outside of this life experience.
That could be the particular genetic combination that the individual needed to finish their personal evolution on particular topics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many different ways of looking at that. It's even in chemistry, they got upset with me because I would kept asking, where does that come from? You know, I said, I understand the chart, you know, and I understand how it all bonds together, but where did it, where did that all come from? And they'd get a little upset with me.
Send Josh to the library to do independent study.
Yeah, exactly. The it's really interesting. I've been trying to tie this all together here, and it's definitely there's some shift. And they have, you know, everybody has a thing, the Mayan calendar. I've listened to the Horizon Project. They've had some really good information, the real scientific information about these major shifts that we're going through. And, you know, you get into the Eastern thought and things like that. They talk about these major evolutionary jumps that are cycles that we're moving into. And everybody has a different story, it seems like. But I don't know if what's coming through your school, or maybe you could give us some information on that, or maybe what they're talking about as far as the future, the days to come on every level, you know, from the physical up through the higher levels of consciousness, or how it's going to affect the planet, you might say.
Well, the days that come are here. So it's the days that are
yeah.
here. We're into we're into volatile world changes, and we're into volatile economic and sociological changes and earth changes.
Mm-hmm.
And in times of volatility, those are the times of where everything's all ripe for change in personal perspective, because after a long period of stasis and abundance, and there's no incentive to change and to grow personally and to evolve and to make a contribution. And so the difficult times that are upon us in many different ways is an impetus to get creative and to set aside the past and to look to the future. And certainly Grantha has given a variety of presentations on the topics of, you know, the earth changes that are upon us and what's ahead for the next few years. But he's always recommended that everybody be, you know, personally prepared to be sovereign and self-sufficient, because you really can't evolve in consciousness if you're depending on other people to take care of you. And that goes from the smallest of things to the broadest of its implications. So, you know, one of the first steps in Rampa's view, I have heard, is and seen over the years is get self-sufficient, get, you know, get sovereign, be able to take care of yourself, you know, be responsible for yourself and your life and your family, and that frees up so much emotional energy, because you aren't, you can't become a victim to somebody else if you're not dependent on them. And you, then you can be a contributor. You can be a source of support and inspiration to others instead of being a drain, waiting for somebody to come take care of you. And, you know, life is the gift. After that, there's no entitlements. We all have the same abilities to create. And so, you know, in the school, most of the students have addressed the issues of being self-sufficient and, you know, being prepared for weathering the storms or whatever they may be on the horizon. And so we're looking to the future. You know, we're looking at 2013 and, you know, 2050 and 2060. I'm personally excited about 2060. I have to tell you, it just is going to be a banner year in my timeline.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you see in 2013 or 2060? Is it, are you saying 2060?
I said 2060, about 50 years out. You know, and I think what we're going to see is just radical creativity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the waking up of that power in all of us, and then being able to recognize it in other people and give them the freedom to create however they want to create without judgment. Mm-hmm. And that's going to come from that place of inner confidence, inner strength that knows that, you know, we're not limited to our body's five senses. We're not limited to our physical body, that we can know the future. We can know beyond what's around, beyond the horizon and what's ahead. And then we can prepare for it. And as we gain the skills of seeing the shadows of future events and being prepared for them, then we gain the skill and the strength and the ability to begin to mold them and to change what, is probable as opposed to only possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to create just a radical new approach to social evolution, I think, and it's going to create a radical new approach to our relationship with the earth and with nature, because now we're no longer living on it like parasites.
Yeah, that is, does seem to be the major problem I've seen over and over again, is that we're not living in harmony with the land, and we're not living in harmony with each other. And when you're living out of harmony, you're creating disharmony or a distortion, and nature seems to like to clean that up, you know.
Yeah, and it gives everybody a wonderful opportunity to set aside, you know, petty differences and you know, look past skin color and look past creed and say,
mm-hmm.
You know what, you're really good with an axe. You're really good with that. Let's get together and build something here and, you know, make a better life for our community.
I always tell people that we have to transcend both cultural and religious diversity, and just, you know, it's okay to have your belief systems, but, you know, we need to, you know, make love the ultimate law, or whatever you want to call it,
See, that goes back to the quantum physics revolution. There isn't one right any of things.
Yeah.
Everybody's right, you know.
Exactly.
Everybody gets their first choice. Everybody, and when we can engage people from that perspective, then that frees us up from having to either take care of them or fix them or save them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite interesting. Once you transcend that and you just love everybody, regardless of their color or their race or their religion, you know, we'd end all the wars. We'd end all the, just about everything would go out the door, disease and poverty. As long as we stuck to the basics, which we all know within ourselves. I mean, I often wonder, you know, we look at we haven't even mastered getting along with the basic cultural and, you know, the multicolored earth suits that we're jumping into. We haven't even figured out how to get along, you know, on this level. And then when you look at the rest of the universe, which a lot of us have, and we see the other diverse forms of life that are adaptations to their environments, and you know, you have beings that might be blue skinned or red skinned or totally different than any other,
or not have skin like we have.
Yeah, or have just a totally different form whatsoever. You know, you
mm-hmm.
might even find a humanoid feline or something like that out there. And you know, I think about that. You know, we haven't even created, you know, universal peace here. what are we going to do, you know, when we start interacting with the rest of the universe, and how are we going to greet them? Are we going to continue to greet them with aggression and fear?
Well, we're not going to greet them as a collective if the collective doesn't mature. So it's going to be, you know, one at a time. And, you know,
exactly.
And that's always been the case, you know. And the people that aren't ready for it, well, they get to stay behind. That's okay.
Yeah, and the people that are having the experiences, when they try to share it, you know, they want to lock them up. And,
you know, eventually somebody gets to the point of, is this all there is?
Mm-hmm.
And when they reach that point of restlessness, then all the old petty attitudes come up, and you say, you know, those are boring. I'm going to get rid of those. And once you do that, then new horizons open up automatically.
Mm-hmm. You know, it does seem to be that, as a collective, that seems to be where we're going, because we're seeing changes in all of the, you know, even the fundamentalists, a lot of the religions that are getting fanatical, people are getting fed up with that program as well. It's all seemed to be unraveling, and all the, everything's coming out of the closet, you might, all the hidden
mm-hmm.
things and the nonsense seems to be coming up and surfacing, and, you know, the real truth is starting to come forward, which I think is going to, you know, unravel a lot of these old establishments, and we're even seeing in our own government right now, it's hopefully we do move towards a more transparent government and hopefully open up, you know, these new technologies that we already have here on the planet, such
well,
as field of
societies
energy.
And nations go through the same stages of evolution that individuals do.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems to be, I have a real positive feeling in one way that we're going in a really good direction, but in another way I know we're going to have some very severe challenges as, you know, on the way.
Yeah, well, you know, challenges are good. That's what it compels us to get greater.
Mm-hmm. I love what Rompa said. He said, gods don't do boring things.
There you go.
And it's going to be anything but boring in the days to come. I enjoy it. I think some amazing things. And I know if we get in that flow that we were talking about earlier and align with this new world coming in and lovingly and joyously prepare and act on that inner guidance and make our own personal God, creator, spirit connection, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
We'll be fine as we move in. And even if we screw up and have to start over, so what? You know,
that's right. So, you know, you blow it up, you start over again.
Yeah, we
just... And you're wiser for the experience.
it's definitely, any way you look at it. But it just seems that this whole planet is evolving, it's shifting, it seems to be on its way to cleaning itself up, and we're definitely moving towards a pretty incredible future, and hopefully we can live in harmony with each other and the planet and bring in these new technologies that, you know, can take care of all of our needs. And I know they're here right now because I've experienced them firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the wonderful thing about keeping your focus on the future, is if your focus is on the future, then those thoughts, those technologies, those ideas are going to be processed in the brain of people that are forward-thinking and forward-looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're working on collecting some of these, getting a collective together. I've got a wonderful group here that seem to be masters in every field, and hopefully bring them to get together. Just as you're doing at the Rompa School, you're bringing some of the highest teachers, you might say, and in their fields to bring out this new knowledge.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
And what do you foresee as far as have you been on top of some of the new breakthroughs in technology coming out?
I followed it for several years, and in this past year, my focus has been elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I've sort of taken a sabbatical from following the developments of technology. But for a long time, I was following, you know, the Bearden's work and John, the other guy. And at the moment, I'm just drawing a blank. But I've
mm-hmm.
I spent this last year really studying economics and the geopolitical issues in preparation for what came about rather quickly this fall with the meltdowns and all that. So my mind's really been into finance and economics for the last few many months, because it was an area that I wasn't really up to speed on, and I could see the writing on the wall. I could see that things were, you know, shifting in that realm, and I wanted to be knowledgeable so that as the shifts occur, I would have a basis for knowledge and could certainly orient, you know, myself and my family for the shifts that are coming in, mm-hmm. in finance and in the social political realms. And so that's really taken a back seat on technology.
Mm-hmm. And well, as far as what wisdom have you gained in that area, as far as our social economic progress, where do you think we're going there?
Well, I'm up 20% on the year in my investments, instead of down 10 or 20. So,
oh, that's good.
I think where we're going is pretty clear. Probably the best analogy is what happened in Germany between the two wars, the Weimar Republic. We're almost having an identical scenario coming out of the Iraq war and dealing with socioeconomic issues here in this country and our reputation around the world, that we're going to see worldwide, we're going to see a continuing decay of economic flows and prosperity, and we're probably going to see a shift in the dollar as no longer being the world's reserve currency. In fact, in some of the less pleasant scenarios, we're probably going to experience the same kind of hyperinflation with the dollar that was experienced in Germany before the rise of the National Socialist Party in the late 20s and early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't bode well for, you know, a nation that's really still in its adolescence and is, you know, it's just coming into a time of great challenge of having to go through this transition as a nation.
You know, it's funny because the actually it's not really funny. I shouldn't even use that word, but
well, yeah, it's humorous from certain perspectives. You know, cosmic humor has always got an odd twist to it.
Yeah, exactly. I have that cosmic humor. I've been accused of that quite a bit. The it's interesting how that you know, when you compare it to the Third Reich or whatever, you know, it's like we're really not that much different, you know. But it does seem like we are moving in a much more positive direction, and hopefully.
I love Mark Twain saying, history may not repeat itself, but it does rhyme.
yeah, it does. This one definitely rhymes. This is the last mm-hmm. one we just came through, but hopefully with this new administration, we'll be going in a much more transparent, positive direction and more peaceful approach to solving conflict.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to say? We've got just a few minutes left, so I know you've got your book out. Did you want to talk about that? Or?
Actually, it's not a book. It's a DVD.
Oh, it's a DVD, yeah.
It's called Non-Locality,
uh-huh.
New Perspective for Your Life. And it presents some of the basic themes of quantum physics, quantum mechanics, and how we can apply those principles to our lives. And it's not a matter of, it's not from the perspective of saying, you know, science says this or science says that and therefore, but so it's not using quantum physics to prove, you know, a particular conscious or spiritual perspective, but simply says this is evidence. Because mm-hmm. You can use any scientific model to prove, you know, to prove any philosophical position you want to, because they're not really designed to do that. Even in Newton's day, you know, Newton was creating his laws to prove the existence of God, and then 100, 200 years later, they were using Newton's mechanics to prove the non-existence of God. So that's you know, I kind of twitch a little bit when people say, well, quantum physics proves that, you know, this or that about spiritual matters. It really doesn't. It points to some things, it suggests some things, mm-hmm. and that's what I do in my DVD is discuss certain results, certain themes, certain principles that have come to be accepted as aspects of the nature of reality, and then given that, say, well, so what are the implications of that in our daily lives? what are the implications of the fact that we're all observers, and what we observe we affect? And then I sort of outline those and come back to, again, you know, if we're creative but we're not really good observers, and we all have attention deficit disorder because we can't hold our focused thought for longer than 6 to 10 seconds, then we're really not going to be, you know, terribly effective at creating reality because we're constantly distracted. But if we hone that skill, if we develop the ability to hold a long focus, we become our own great visionary, like people of history that we admire so well, then reality will mold and conform eventually to our inner vision. And it's that thought, that idea, that what we hold as an inner vision and inner reality, if we just hold it resolutely and use the science to support our resolve and to give us the confidence to say, yes, even though I'm not getting fast, immediate results, I will get results if I persist. And so I think that's the value of quantum physics and its principles, is it helps build our confidence and strengthen our will and our resolve to persist until we do get consistent results as creative beings. And that whatever we then, you know, put our thought on, we can take on greater opportunities and create greater changes and take on greater challenges because we've got greater experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly have lots of great challenges ahead of us. So it's no time like the present to start training one's resolve.
Yeah, I would say so. It's we're definitely going to be tested in that arena.
Yeah.
And it definitely seems to be the Earth School is coming into its final exam and graduation.
At least in one level.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to get to see who did their homework, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's getting to be some pretty interesting times here. We're just seeing phenomenal things happen here and photographs and things. We are just so far outside the box lately. I have to go and meditate on some of these things for a while just to figure out what they are.
That's great. You don't want to rush to conclusions.
No.
Keep the door
of possibility
open. And
I'm still open for a different interpretation.
Exactly.
But you know, we're getting you know, with the orbs, you know, mm-hmm. You know, I'll have to get you back onto the show again to get into the.
Have you been using the infrared security cameras to get the record the infrared spectrum with the orbs?
You know, actually, we have something a little better. We were using an iGen,
mm-hmm.
And it's a Sony. It's an iGen, and it has an illuminator on it too. An infrared,
yeah,
sends the beam out, and we're having the orbs totally interacting with people,
exactly,
coming down
in motion, real time on video,
exactly, and
yeah.
And flying right through people, and you
yeah.
see people's arms fly up when they go through them, and they go, oh my God, and they jump into bliss and.
Yeah,
and
cool.
Total interactions with the orbs here, and you know, coming right at the camera and pulsing, you know, flying against the wind, flying through things, everything. We have it all on film now, so it's pretty undeniable. And we're also filming some pretty massive ships flying overhead as well with the same technology.
Well, there you go. So the next step is now that you've established diplomatic relationships, is to build that bridge of communication even stronger.
Exactly. That's what we're using the technology for. Just say, look, they're here. Now what do we do? You know.
Now let's communicate.
Yeah, let's communicate and see what they have to offer and how they can help us. You know, in the
and
in
vice versa,
you might say. Well, we're about out of time here. We've got just a minute left. So, is there anything you want to now? As far as getting your
the non-locality DVD
is
only available. Well, it might be on Amazon by now, actually. But it's certainly available at ramfa.com in our online store.
Mm-hmm.
And or check out, yeah, it might be on Amazon by now. I haven't looked recently. Gosh, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate having the opportunity to chat with you and have your folks listen in.
Oh, thanks so much for coming on the show. And we'll have to get you on again and talk more about orbs and how particles are smaller as you move up in frequency. And
who are they?
That,
and where are they?
Yeah.
And we're just like them. We're orbs too.
Yeah.
And then we'll do some self-portraits of ourselves out of body.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think we have a few of those here. Well, Well, anyway, so I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll definitely get you back on again. It's been an awesome interview, and have a great evening.
Okay, thank you, James.
All right, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and watch the skies. They're busy tonight. Good night.
Good night.